This is the Love FOCO Show.
One of the things that I also share, and I hear this from students too, Fort Collins, you know, it's labeled the choice city a lot of times, but I also challenge back in the sense of choice for who, because we also have segments who feel invisible and yeah. They don't feel like they've been represented, depending where you're coming from. They're like, I feel great on campus because of all the support, but once I leave here, there's a different dynamic that's happening.
Welcome to the Love FOCO Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and changemakers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Hey everyone, Jeff Faust here, the host for the Love FOCO Show. So grateful because today's conversation is with Craig Chesson, the Dean of Students at Colorado State University. You know, we live in a city where our university is such an integral and important part to who we are becoming as an area. And Craig has an incredible amount of influence in the lives of students on campus, and then consequently in our city, because those students are a part of our community. The conversation today covers all kinds of different things like race and raising a family, moving from New York City to the Front Range, to backgrounds and what it means to find your home, that resting posture where you can thrive and grow into everything that you were created to be. I'm so excited because Craig's influence and leadership will hopefully inspire you and also open your eyes to what it means to be a college student in today's era. Thanks for listening in. Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us on the Love FOCO Show. I'm so excited to be here with you. I mean, I've enjoyed getting to know you. I'd love to talk about all kinds of different things professionally, how you're loving our city and what you love about Fort Collins, how you found yourself here. But I always like to start with kind of this first initial question. What is your Fort Collins origin story? I mean, we all have, you know, some of us were born and raised here and that whole, a lot of people have moved here. That's my case. Mm-hmm. What's your like origin story? How did you find Fort Collins? How'd you grow up? What was that like for you?
Well, Jeff, thanks for the invite to participate in this Love FOCO story. My story, I'm not from Fort Collins. I grew up in New York City, in New York.
Okay.
Was raised, born, you know, family roots there. And in 1992, decided to go west and come out to Fort Collins, Colorado. Matter of fact, it was not my original intent at that time. I followed my girlfriend Lisa.
Okay, okay.
So it's a love story.
We should probably talk about that. We should probably, because so many of our lives have been following someone we're in love with.
So there was a lot of risk going on here because I had my roots, and I want to really describe the community that I really left to come to Fort Collins.
Well, I mean, we've got, because I have to imagine, New York City to Fort Collins, there couldn't hardly be a different, a greater amount of change.
Yes. I mean, I was in Chelsea, Manhattan, and that's in lower Manhattan. And I was working at that time, I was in the hotel business working for Grand Hyatt New York.
Okay.
That's where my undergrad, what I studied, but I was miserable.
And
between being miserable in an employment area, and I was tired of New York City, where the pace is about 25,000 faster than Fort Collins.
I can't imagine.
The cost of living, the fast pace of it. I just needed to leave, and it was, you know, my father, you know, raised everything there. He loved it, and his family members who love it, but I just couldn't do it.
It's a specific kind of person that like loves New York City and wants to just grind it out for 80 years in New York City. I mean, how did you land at the Hyatt, by the way? So what did you, was it like business hospitality? Like where did you land and how did you get into the Hyatt role?
I studied at Rochester Institute of Technology, Hotel Resort Management.
Okay.
And that's where, actually now my wife and I studied together. It is Western New York. And after receiving the degree, I worked with Stouffer's, I worked with all sweet chains, and was miserable. The goal was to be owner of hotel properties.
Okay.
And have that field.
Yeah.
And I was preparing for it, and in the beginning I loved it. And the only piece that I really enjoyed was part of my job was introducing the industry to students. And I'll connect the student piece later.
Interesting,
on.
Yeah.
But, and I coordinated programs with the five boroughs from Brooklyn, Queens, and I hosted a whole day. And I coordinated with marketing, business, housekeeping, sales.
Yes.
Introduced the industry
yeah.
to disadvantaged youth, young people who could see it as a profession. So that was really, really fascinating. And the community was extremely, extremely diverse, where I could walk down my block for where there were millionaires working on the stock market to people who were houseless, who were just insecure food-wise on my block.
Yeah.
And that was just, you know, like incredible. Or you could see famous people who are actors, who are in the film industry, and then you could also see people who just basically immigrants who just got here
yeah.
from all over the world.
Right.
Which was just...
Someone whose name carries great weight and someone who is
yes.
largely nameless and faceless in this
faceless, just
fast-paced society.
In our society.
Yeah.
And there were components, you know, where in this community that I didn't realize this until I got to Fort Collins, where I was spoiled because it was culturally rich.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to be intentional about finding foods, cultural products,
yep.
hair products, cultural, my faith community. I had options galore
right.
to explore.
Yep.
So other parts of my Southern heritage too. So my dad's side had access to that too.
Yep.
And entertainment, social events,
yeah.
cultural events.
Like all of your senses.
Yes.
I mean, sights, sounds, tastes.
Everything.
I mean, there are sights, sounds, and tastes in the front range, but they're maybe not as diverse. And our listeners can't, I mean, our listeners are, they're just listening to us, but they don't know that you grew up as a black man
That's
in
right.
New York.
In New
and
York.
You moved, still a black man,
That's right.
into
That's right.
the front range. So the geography changed, and those sights and sounds and tastes and senses, those experiences changed.
Yes.
And your... cultural desires, background, you know, your loves.
That's right.
I have to imagine, I don't want to speak for you, so just tell me where this is right or wrong, but I have to imagine there was a sense of loss even from going from New York City to like you had to maybe even grieve some of the things you truly loved that were just naturally there.
And that's just a great question because where I was going to share is when I first came out to Fort Collins, I immediately left.
Did you really?
I left. I said, this place is not for me.
Even though your girlfriend was still here.
Was still here. And I said, this is not going to work out. Fort Collins just seems so distant. At that time, there was nothing on Prospect Road.
Okay.
When you're in Denver, when you get to the airport, there's no signs to Fort Collins. It had signs to Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Wow.
So it's like, what is this place that I'm going to?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it didn't help. I had friends back in New York who were giving me the jokes about, you gotta milk the cow?
yes.
What's going on there?
Yeah.
You're the only black person here, you know,
yeah.
probably one out of, you know, million. How can you
yeah.
do that? And it was tough because we had a church we were going to, which is a predominantly African-American church. If it wasn't for that, the only African-American person I would see the whole week would be at that time my fiance.
Really?
So talk that dynamic.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to get out of here. So I went back home to New York City and my father was just like, son, this is the poorest decision you're making. You're rushing it. You're judging. I want you to go back and stay for a year and go back. And he's like, this is the best thing for you. You better go back.
You know, we just need some voices like that in our life, right? Like, hey, you just got like, this is going to develop some grit, some perseverance. We all need that. We all need some voices in our life like that.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, as a white guy here in Fort Collins, mm-hmm. I mean, this it's just an interesting thing to learn from parts of your story of there's not a room really in Fort Collins where I walk into where mm-hmm. I'm not the majority.
That's right.
You know, where I mean, there's not a room where I walk into and I think, am I the only person that's going to look like me mm-hmm. here?
Right.
That's just like a burden that I don't live with on a daily basis that mm-hmm. tell me about that journey. Cause I mean, I think there's just a lot that I don't know there.
Right. And when you know, coming here back in 92, I first got here and to your question, you're right. Fort Collins is a white community and you get reminded of that constantly. And whether you walk in a grocery store, whether you explore the faith community, whether you go into the school district and even finding educational opportunities, you get reminded of it constantly.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the reminder can come in forms of questions from community members. And a lot of times some of the questions is really coming from a place of innocence, is a lack of understanding,
right.
Just don't know.
Yep.
But for the person, particularly as an African-American man and as people of color, it's a reminder of, whoa, how distant and how, wow, disconnected you can be in this community.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really enjoy about Fort Collins too is the friendliness that comes with it. But there's also, like I said, a place of ignorance. And when you go to a shopping mall, when you go to our mall, and you could just look, you're looking for certain things and it's just not gonna be there.
Yeah.
And but what you're reminded of are clothing styles that could be Eurocentric. It could be even the piece, I remember shopping for my daughters, even talking to my wife, our physical bodies are different.
Yeah.
So
yeah, just even physiologically, yeah.
Yes, it's not gonna be present. So
a
lot of people, especially when we first arrived here, we spent so much time in Denver, a larger city, because it was more accommodating and we found the needs.
Yep.
And it was just like, after a while that got old.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's sometimes even a subconscious cost, I would imagine, of like the energy that you have to put out to always find your space.
Yes.
That maybe I don't have to exert.
Right.
Because my space is already there.
Right.
That can be taxing, not only on an individual, but it can be taxing on a family too.
Yes.
And so you had mentioned, raising your family. We know each other enough mm-hmm. to know that you've got kids. And mm-hmm. tell me a little bit about what it was like raising a family here in Fort Collins,
yes.
predominantly white community, mm-hmm. African-American family, versus maybe what you experienced yourself growing up as a young black man in New York, and just some of the blessings as well as the challenge. Because I'm sure there's blessings and challenges both.
Absolutely. And you know, the blessings were, and this is something that I talk to this day, even to families and students today about in Fort Collins, the educational system, the quality there, where in my background, we didn't have, you know, even the playgrounds, the parks, even some of the technology and books. Whereas here, there is not a bad school.
Yeah.
Whereas back in my home community, you're talking about stay away from districts because you're not gonna have to go there, or you're going to a Catholic school or a private school.
Yep.
That's your education.
Yeah.
If you go to the public,
you either gotta pick the right district or you gotta pay money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Versus coming here when we're selecting for our kids, it was just like, oh man, there are good schools all over. But I tell you a story, you know, before we spent some time in Loveland and before we moved up to Fort Collins, and I remember, I'll never forget this day, I was, you know, in my office and my wife calls me because she went looking for schools and she told me, she's like, we're either gonna do school of choice to Fort Collins, we're not going to the Thompson School District, because she did an interview with the school and it was so harsh culturally. She was asking about just the history of the demographics of school. And not that we knew it was going to be low, but they couldn't even answer the question.
Yeah.
And she said, no way my babies are coming here.
Yeah.
We're either coming up if we can't get school of choice to yep. Fort Collins, we're leaving.
We're moving, yeah.
We're out of here. And that's, you know, the hard part is, I remember, you know, I've been here, you know, 33 years, and how many families, particularly black families who have left, not because Fort Collins is a bad city, but they've never made the cultural connection. And what yep. is paramount to be successful here, and we were able to do it, is you need to find your core community of likeness, people who look like you,
yeah.
people who experience things like you. And we found it. It was a predominantly African-American church with an African-American pastor, where that was finding refuge
right.
to build that community for our kids, for us. And to be honest, without that, I don't think we would develop the strength as a young couple.
Well, I think paramount is the right word.
Yes.
I think paramount is the right paramount. Word. I was just having a beer at Odell's the other day with mm-hmm. a guy who moved here from Taiwan.
Yeah.
And he goes to a Taiwanese church
yes.
with his son because mm-hmm. he wants his son to be able to worship
yep.
In the language he grew up in yeah. and to experience worship in a familiar sound and mm-hmm. With a pastor that's even interpreting scriptures and preaching scriptures, that's mm-hmm. very tied to his cultural experience. Yes. And I think that is really, really rich. Now, yes. as a white guy, like I would actually love to find myself in some of those communities because I have noticed, as I'm sure you have, mm-hmm. there is a distinct style
yes.
of worship
yes.
that is different, you
very
know,
different.
And sometimes a white church and an African-American church. And mm-hmm. my wife and I moved here from Kansas City and we just miss mm-hmm. some of the gospel
yep.
choir, the preaching, the beautiful
yes.
illustrations and the application of the preaching.
Absolutely.
That was so good for us and
yeah.
rich for our hearts.
Right.
I totally get that it sounds a bit different.
Yes.
Maybe in your average kind of, you know, white church in Fort Collins than what you're used to.
Yes. And my family, particularly from my father's side, you know, talking about Pentecostal, you know, going to church all the time, to Episcopalian on my mother's side. So the faith, and same thing with my wife, it was always grounded there. And then to
yeah.
come here, the journey for it in Fort Collins, on one side, the beauty of Fort Collins, it seemed like every other block, you about the faith community, there's churches all over the place here.
Yeah, some great churches. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, when you have a family, particularly African American family, with this history from New York, urban, trying to seek, it's a huge challenge. It took us a long time, particularly when COVID happened and we transitioned to church. Everyone was social distancing.
Yeah.
Everything went to online. And it's already hard as a family of color. Then you add that dynamic
oh.
on it. It's just brutal.
Yeah.
And the beauty was, and I remember, you know, the first time we came to Vineyard, it was very refreshing because it was just so natural and the flow of the service. And I remember I said, I was like, this can't be real. This is just a special Sunday.
Yeah.
Of kindness and everything. And
yeah.
we returned and it was... Again, and it was just like, wow. And it was the uniqueness being there too of not seeing other international pieces in there too. It was just like, wow, that's really neat.
Yeah.
And that's something I know we needed. And that's great for a Fort Collins community to have those different dimensions to
yep.
make up a strong.
Well, that's sweet that's been your experience at the Vineyard. Obviously, I'm biased towards the Vineyard Church as well. But. You know, I still recognize that there is probably still a bit of a cost. And
yes.
I, you know, you had mentioned even raising your kids mm-hmm. and having a place of refuge for their faith.
Yes.
You know, I mean, there's a degree of your heart that if mm-hmm. you're going to go to a place of worship, you don't want to have to work that hard.
Right.
You
right.
know, like, I just want to worship. You
right,
know?
Right.
And so, yes, it's a different church than maybe the one you started at mm-hmm. here in Fort Collins, but I will say, I mean, it was really sweet. Just even this last week, we got to celebrate Every Tribe, Every Nation,
right.
which is a celebration of God's diversity in the kingdom. And 22 nations represented at the Vineyard Church with not a lot of different sounds quite yet.
Not yet.
But some different tastes.
Yes, yes, yes.
I always call it the tastiest Sunday of the year because everyone's bringing in something from their heritage and background to share with everyone. And that, that can be a beautiful thing to celebrate. And it was fun to do that with you.
Absolutely.
And I'm curious then. I'd love to ask, as you kind of continue to raise your kids here, at what point did, or maybe it was, you know, maybe it was early on or just a growing sense, did you and your wife and your family start to say things? I mean, I hear it a little bit in the education, like, man, what this city offers in education, we love that. What are some other things that you've come to really appreciate and love about Fort Collins and our area?
Well, the biggest piece I think is the physical, the outdoors.
Yeah.
That it offered our children and family experience that my wife and I never had in an urban, you know, talking about the concrete jungle. Here, we have Horsetooth Reservoir. Who could go out there and spend weekends up there?
Yep.
I tease family members. I'm like, my backyard, I have Estes Park and the Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yes.
What are you talking about? This is nothing. I mean, I said, you want beauty? So when family comes up there, they're just taken away. And it's just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
The beauty of here, just nature, sustainability, I mean, is just incredible. Just education around natural resources. This city, there's food. There's different, you know, we have tons of restaurants and things like that, which, you know, it's funny. I think our family turned into little foodies here and enjoy experiencing the different tastes and things like that. We also enjoy, you know, the Poudre River, the whitewater rafting. So there's so much of the outdoor element is huge that we really enjoy being here. And Denver is not that far away if you want that urban experience.
Right.
So we have connections with over the years if we want that in the Denver area community. But what was crucial for our kids here is that we had to be intentional about creating a cultural foundation in all the kids. And you create that by exposing them to film, history, museums, whenever, you know, a lot of times that, you know, you talk about family vacations, some people, if they're able to do it, they may pack up the car and we're gonna go up to South Dakota and things like that. Our experience, we're intentional about cultural dynamics, has to be there to explore that foundation. So when we come back to Fort Collins in this community, they're gonna feel confident and secure about who they are.
Yep.
And once you have that foundation, whether you're exposed to predominantly white environments, you know you're gonna be able to survive. It doesn't mean you're not gonna feel uncomfortable.
Right.
Or it could be exhausting to be the only Black person in this theater or in this event, but you feel comfortable, you feel confident. It's funny because now our kids, you know, who are adults now, they come back here and they're like, wow, I go to the store now and there's way more people of color than when I was, you know, 20 something. And it's, you're right.
It is changing.
It's changing, the dynamic is changing.
Yep.
And
why do you think that is? I mean, I you had mentioned the kindness of the community.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned even the hospitality, the welcomeness that you experienced at Vineyard Church. Hopefully that's analogous to some degree of the city at large.
Sure.
I think that helps a little bit, but there's gotta be other things that are happening that are maybe increasing the staying power of folks of diverse backgrounds at, mm-hmm. at one point that, you know, in the 90s, you were like, no, I'm out.
You're right.
You know, and but now maybe there's, what do you think's happening that's helping grow that diversity?
I think maybe some, you know, some industries and some employers are recruiting and bringing people here. We also, what I've noticed, you know, military, particularly up in Wyoming, Cheyenne, there's connections there. And I was at a networking event on Tuesday. And a lot of the people from Cheyenne can't come here because they say Fort Collins has way more to offer.
Interesting.
So they're like shopping, networking, technology, other needs. Fort Collins is the place to do it.
Yeah.
So I think you're seeing more of that, the educate people going back to school. And because of the economy right now, and because of right now, as far as not many jobs out there, come back to get your education and then enter the workforce later on. So yep. With all that, I think you're seeing more and more people from more folks of color.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to imagine we can transition into kind of, because I want to get into your work here
sure.
and how you're loving our city professionally and individually. I know you mm-hmm. play a big part because you're the dean of students here at CSU, which is, I mean, you've probably seen even the diversity on campus mm-hmm. change and merge. And then it's such a big part of our city.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about an influx of thousands of students every year. And last time I checked, enrollment is growing, and it has been, I think, since I've moved here. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine the university's got to play a huge part and a role in that too. And if you come to school here, there's probably a fair amount of people who'd like to stick around here. It's just a beautiful place to live.
It is, and it's a blessing and a curse to work with students because, you know, as you said, you know, we've had record enrollment, and you know, this is our most diverse class this, you know, coming in here this fall. And Fort Collins, you know, it's a big recruiting piece for students to come here. It's a beautiful place to study.
Yeah.
But we don't have employment afterwards for everyone to stay.
Right.
So that's the curse there too.
Yep.
And professionally for students in this community, what I really enjoy is first the many partnerships we have with the city because we have to do it together. Because we have a major piece with the top, you know, employer up here, and you see a drastic difference on the breaks. You know, community members tease all the time, like, well, I could tell when it's winter break because the traffic goes down drastically.
Right.
Or in the summertime, it's just like, wow, I could, you know, get on that side of campus because there's not as much traffic here. But the institution plays a huge role here. I love the partnerships with the city, whether it's the Limerick County Food Bank, whether it's our partnership with the city of Fort Collins, working with our students, because the reality is the majority of our students are living in the city and they're not on campus. We may host about 6,000, but...
That's right. Yeah, they're spread all over.
They're all over.
Apartments, condos, houses, you name it.
So they are community members.
That's right.
And part of our role, you know, that, and it's our responsibility to spend time educating our students how to be a good community member, because they don't have any experience. They're just thinking student, study, eat,
get on that. Yeah.
They're local ordinances, you know. You have to shovel. You have to take care of your lawn. You just can't, you know.
There are HOAs around
that's
here.
That's right, you know. There are noise ordinance. You can't blast into in the morning.
That is so funny. Yeah, that's really true. And, like, especially if you're moving maybe from out of state or from a concrete jungle type city, you had mentioned. So I moved here from Kansas City, so much smaller than New York City, but still a metro, about 2.5-3 million people, mm-hmm. a lot of concrete, a lot of hustle. Maybe not to the degree that you would see in Manhattan, but definitely it's metropolitan influence. We moved here, and I'm just even looking out the window as we do this interview in the podcast here. The Oval is beautiful. There's these amazing mature trees. There's students walking around outside. And I remember when I think one of the first news stories I read was about a black bear hanging out in one of those trees out in the Oval. And I was like, oh, this is not Kansas anymore. Like, what has happened? There's black bears like potentially in our backyard. Like, you got to put the dogs in at night. This is such a huge part of our campus. You play a really big role here at the university. I'd love to have you talk a little bit about, you know, how you're loving our city just by holding this profession of yours and caring for students and caring for your team. And talk to us a little bit about the life of a young adult, the life of a college student. I mean, I'm only 40 years old now, but I already have forgotten exactly what it was like to be a college student. And I had a different kind of deck of cards. I mean, I didn't go through COVID in my final high school years. I just had a different growing up experience than maybe the college students on your campus today. So tell me a little bit about that and fill us in on like the life of a college student today.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And even
in my work professionally, I work with college students and as an administrator, and even have my own children who are college students, I still get the aha moments. It's still a learning experience. Today's college student, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, they're overwhelmed from the process even to get here before they step foot on campus, what they have to do from the studies, the applications, trying to secure finance, trying to do college visits. And then once they get here on campus, particularly at CSU, a large, you know, public state institution, it can be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
There's so many choices. On one hand, you know, the beauty of coming, why they selected here is all the resources and support that you can be successful here.
Yep.
But at the same time, a lot of our students today, the way they've been socialized, technology has just, you know, these tablets and phones and just zap them. That drives their life.
Yeah.
And they tell us that in all that, a lot of the studies, you know, that we do. But the technology piece they rely on, whether it's to date the social apps.
Yep.
To social media, where it's like.
Yeah, I bet you didn't meet your wife on a dating app.
No, I did not.
Probably didn't even.
There was
did
no swiping.
I don't want to date you too much, but did you have even a cell phone when you met your wife?
No.
I mean, it's a different world. It's like, you actually had to go and talk to a girl.
Hold a conversation. And the hard part is, a lot of our students, that social skill, and we were intentional about it, we have to do a lot of, you know, building around that.
Yeah.
Because talk about networking, and fear comes over them. Like, you want me to engage in this setting where I don't know these people and actually go up to them, introduce myself and say more. Some students have that down, but there's a lot of anxiety. And the biggest piece that I've noticed over time is just the mental health of our students.
Mm.
Anxiety, when I first started, depression was the number one. Anxiety has exceeded the depression for our students now.
Yeah.
And if they're experiencing it before they get here, and they look at our campus with the resources, like, yeah, I can go there because there's a lot of support. And what's changed too is the stigma around mental health for our students. When I first started, you did not talk about it. Families didn't want to talk about it.
Just
students didn't
want to stuff it down and keep grinding and just keep going.
Right now, you have students coming to orientation saying, this is my diagnosis. I see this therapist and my meds are so-and-so. How can I transfer up here? And it's like, whoa,
yeah,
that forthcoming. They will go to faculty members and talk about their anxiety and for tests, and this is what I'm doing, this is how I could be, which is great. But today's college student, to interact with them, you have, if you don't have that foundation, you're like, why is this person behaving this way? Or this just seems off.
Well, and I imagine it's got to be challenging because inherently in a university campus, you have generational gaps.
Yes.
Right? You have college students who are a particular age, mm-hmm. and you have professors and leaders of the campus who are older. They've already gone through that age. They've started a career. They've lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to imagine that there's a learning curve for students, but also for faculty on how to engage with students.
Yes.
To not be, yeah. No, I know you're anxious, but you still have to take the test. Or like, I mean, there's employers out there that are going to be more compassionate or less compassionate.
That's right.
That's real.
That's real.
But at the same time, they're not employees yet. They're still students. And
that's
so how can we navigate and shape? Because these are formative years. I mean,
absolutely.
I was shaped so much from 18 to 22. As so many of us are, and I was shaped by people who really invested in my life and really cared.
And when I talk to students, I tell them all the time, you know, college experience, it's an academic growth, a personal growth, and a social growth. And you're learning in those three dynamics about yourself. Yes, you come here, there's a discipline you signed up to study, engineering, business, whatever.
Yep.
But a lot of times, there's so much about yourself you are learning. In that first year, when you go home for winter break, a lot of times family members are like, who is this?
That's right. They come home, they're like, "This, you've changed so much.
You've changed so much.
Yeah.
Because the beauty of it, too, is the exposure you get from people in state, out of state, across the world, people in Fort Collins. And the university, what I love about it, and love connected back to Fort Collins, it's a city within a city.
Yeah.
So Colorado State University is a
city. It really is, too. I mean, you've got doctors, you have counselors. You've got restaurants, you've got houses. You have security, you've got the whole thing.
It's a city.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
And then once you step out on college or our exterior circumference here, then you have another level of exposure to navigate.
Yep.
So it's a lot. And one of the things that I also share, and I hear this from students too, Fort Collins, you know, it's labeled the choice city a lot of times, but I also challenge back in the sense of choice for who, because we also have segments who feel invisible and yeah. they don't feel like they've been represented, depending where you're coming from. They're like, I feel great on campus because of all the support, but once I leave here, there's a different dynamic yep. that's happening. And that leads into, I want to really share that we've really been working with basic needs for a lot of our students, because we have several, that's about 25% are food insecure and on our campus.
Wow.
And
so I just want to make sure everybody captures that, because I think if you're listening to this podcast at 2x speed, you might miss that. You just said 25% of the students here are food insecure.
So when you look at, I have my tuition paid, my house paid, my rent paid, my utility, but what gets sacrificed to make it here, you don't get the food.
Yeah.
And we have uplifted, you know, we have Rants Against Hunger, we have food pantries, we have a program where students can apply for meal swipes. And right now, the challenge with a government shutdown with SNAP benefits that help a lot of our students, we have to be creative in stepping in to find options for our students to meet that need. And it's students, we have even some staff and family members as well. So that's another, when I talked about the overwhelm, forget yeah. about your studies.
Right.
What about my basic needs? Are they?
Well, there's a litany of secondary and tertiary challenges when your pantry just doesn't have food in it. I mean, you're not going to, your mind, you are going, you know, overwhelmed, the anxiety, whatever you want, like you are going, you're just going to have different struggles. I mean,
right.
whether it's with studies, whether it's with emotional health or, mm-hmm. or mental, and then let's say your transportation breaks down. Well, now am I choosing between buying tires or buying
right.
food? I mean, these are real life challenges that I think, quite honestly, I just didn't have to deal with when I went to college.
Right.
For a variety of different reasons. Some of it was my family background, mm-hmm. but some of it was also the campus that I was on. It was smaller, it was tighter, and it was a different generation.
Right.
You know, but 20, I mean, that's pretty alarming, actually. 25% of the students are food insecure.
And we define that, for example, if you have to choose, like, you know what, for the whole day, I know I have to skip breakfast because I can't get all three
yeah.
meals.
Yeah.
You're food insecure.
Yeah. And then you have to test high enough to keep your placement here
right.
at this college or
exactly.
whatever, you know, to pass this class or whatever. I mean, yeah, we often think, I mean, I think it's just true that we often think about food insecurity as maybe a global problem, not
right.
so much like in our own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, average community member, how could the average community member be part of making a difference, be part of joining your guys' efforts?
Yeah,
and supporting
I mean,
some of that.
We, you know, one of the biggest efforts, you know, we get community members who come who want to help with our, you know, whole Rams Against Hunger campaign.
Yep.
Who want to, besides just, you know, writing checks, they're like, we want to do more.
Yeah.
And we'll host different events where we may need volunteers to organize the pantries or organize
yep.
and things like that.
The Rams for Hunger, is that like when my kids, they're at their local school here and they're bringing all
yes
yeah
yep and it's tied to the campus.
Yeah
level.
Yeah well my kids love that because they're competing classroom
exactly.
versus classroom, so it's nothing
exactly.
like a little competition to get your kids
that's
to bring
strategy, absolutely.
Yeah
but it's a great partner with the Laramie County Food Bank, and we've you know, that's one of the reason why I love Fort Collins with all these
yeah.
partnerships and with the institution and helping our students.
Yeah,
so that's, you know, and it's also one of the biggest things too I say to people. And once again, with that stigma, you know, college students and checking in with them, they're like, you know, how, you know, I'll take you to lunch or what's going on?
Yep.
You know, are you available? And a lot of them, you bring that down, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's go get a bagel. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything big. And for them, it's just like, oh, that's nothing you just took away. I don't have to think about it. And
yeah.
I could do well in my classes because it's a basic need.
Yep.
Yeah. How can you perform academically if you're hungry?
It's just, yeah. I think that's incredibly challenging.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, I mean, it's such so interesting. And I think it's easy to, as a parent, as a pastor, as a community member, even for my kids to come home with like the Rams for Hunger and like the flyers. Like, yeah, sure. I mean, like you can raid our pantry, but to connect the dots clearly in a conversation to say, yeah, but like what you don't realize is we're talking about 25%. Which, you know, off the top of your head, do you have any idea how many students are hanging around CSU these days?
We're about, our total is about 32, 33,000 students we have here that's on and off campus.
Yeah.
That. So,
25% of that is, you know, multiple thousands.
That's a lot.
It really is.
That's a lot. And, you know, one of the things too, you know, there's the housing piece too. And we our students were really active, you know, with some of the ordinances to help with U+2 so they could live together.
It's a big deal.
Big deal.
The U+2 is a big deal, yeah.
That was a game changer.
Yeah. And well, and I get where it came from, you know, I mean, like...
Absolutely.
But also, there's tension there.
Absolutely.
City, university, growing population, infrastructure can't keep up with just the humans that are around.
Long-term residents, and then you have, you know, there's noise and traffic, congestion, get all that.
Yep.
But that helped a lot of students where it's like, okay, my rent's a little lower.
Well, you can just divide it by five people instead of four, or four people instead of three,
or
whatever.
Or three.
Yeah.
So your rent is higher.
Which we all are aware that the rent is already high. I mean, it's interesting, though. You came from New York, so you actually probably came from, because I came from the Midwest, where I was like sticker shocked, like what is going to happen.
Yes.
But those prices are still high.
Still high. Yes.
Oh, well, let's talk a little bit about just the diversity on campus. We've been kind of having this conversation on and off. I think one of the most beautiful things about being in a university town is that you are drawing not only from different states in the U.S., but there's a strong international component, particularly with some of the graduate work here. I mean, I just met someone the other day from India who's out here studying bovine something another. I mean, she was way smarter than I was. She's working with cows and medicine and all kinds of different things. And there's such a rich education opportunity.
Yes.
And it pulls international students in. I mean, that has to offer a depth and a richness to the campus too. Tell me a little bit about like the international students and how they're interacting just in our city and on campus and what that looks like.
And what's really neat too is that you're right, you know, we pull from China, India, all around the world. They have a significant component they add, particularly socially, when Ramadan comes, you know, a lot of them, they want to share their culture with other students and faculty and staff. So the invitation's here. There's other, what we're seeing in the community, there's other restaurants and foods and stores beginning to pop up more, and our students will tell you quickly, though, that this one here is really authentic. This is where you really need to go.
Oh, you've got the inside track.
Yes.
You got,
yes.
Like, that's real Thai food.
This is real. Exactly. This is the real deal.
Yeah.
So, it's great because our students really, they want that, all of our students, as far as that learning, that diversity piece. A lot of them don't know how. So having the international component come serves that. And we don't want to tax them saying the burden is their burden to train all, but it's more the pride that they make up this university in and out of the classroom, which is really great. And it even goes, you know, the demographics of our community too. I want to just share a little bit even with our first generation students, which is just significant.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been one of the leaders in first generation work for years. We were the first to have a first generation scholarship.
Yep.
We were the first, the mentoring programs, and just how important it is to our land grant mission.
Yeah.
We also invest in our adult learners, students who are older who come back, who, you know, it's an opportunity for whatever life circumstance to come back to get their degree.
Yep.
You know, we have our veterans, one of the top programs.
Yeah.
State.
I mean, I have a good friend of mine who's finishing up his degree now. He's older than I am.
Yep.
And he's hanging out with teenagers sometimes.
Same.
But he's working with a lot of vets.
Yep.
He's working with a lot of adult learners.
Yes.
And he couldn't be more excited to be here.
That's right.
And really, he got a lot of help. I mean, he really did got a lot of help and resources to make it happen.
Yes.
So that's, you know, the beauty of our campus as far as the, once again, tied to our land grant mission of serving all people.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me that CSU was one of the first, you know, to step in that way. The more I get to know this city, the more I learn about its history, they like being the first in things.
Yes.
You know, they like being the first in innovation and excellent services that they can provide to the city and and doing things at a university level, even a utility level here in town. We want to be on the front end of all those things. I'm curious, maybe we can kind of wrap our conversation here. Because I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. You had used the word overwhelmed a few times. And that is a word that comes across my, you know, proverbial desk quite often. Overwhelmed at the current stat, overwhelmed with society at large, overwhelmed with the decisions and the choices.
Yes.
What do you think some of the next steps are for some of those college students to navigate some of those feelings of being overwhelmed and yet still move forward step by step? Mm-hmm. Not at a torrid pace that's going to drive them into the ground. Yep. But what does it look like for those students? And then even your role and your faculty to come alongside some of those students in those formative years and say, hey, there actually is a hope. There actually is a future. There are some key things that you can do to navigate that sense of being overwhelmed. I mean, how do you guys?
I think it's, you know, Jeff, I think it's a partnership. I think both sides, I think the university and students can do some things. I think for students, and we have to teach them about self-efficacy and being able to make decisions about, do I really need to do this right now?
Yep.
Can this really wait? Or do I really need to engage and put this on my plate right now and prioritize and back to the time management? Because a lot of them never had to do that before.
Yeah.
So I think we have to really engage in providing some tools and for the students to be able to self-select and really pinpoint what I really need to do now versus looking at a big funnel. All this is happening and I have to do all of this. So that's pressure and overwhelming.
Yeah.
The institution has to do a better job of maybe, we heard from the students, they're saying, okay, I have to open 10 different doors. Can we have them just open one?
Yeah.
And they just go through for this experience and have the support that they need.
Yep.
That I think will help a lot of us.
Well, it's really interesting because the amount of times I've used overwhelmed to describe my life, you know, plenty of times. Mm-hmm. And I've also lived more life. I've had more experience. And, you know, like I had mentioned, you forget.
You forget.
It's easy to forget.
Easy.
And I think it would do our community a service. I think it would do our students a service. Mm-hmm. I hope it would create more hospitality as students maybe leave the city within the city and explore the greater city of Fort Collins to find themselves in hospitable places to try and remember what it's really like to be 19. Dropped off, the world is in front of you.
Yes.
Exciting.
Yes.
But overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and as an institution, we have to remind ourselves too, because we're like, we want to be creative, like, this will be great for our students. Oh, we could do this.
Yep.
Wait, slow down. You're still overwhelming them.
Yeah.
So we also, we can't pin it all on students. We need to do a better job of really assessing how much we're putting on it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I just had a conversation with my kids last night about decision fatigue.
Oh, yeah.
And like how real this is. And I'm not throwing anyone under the bus or anything, but even like retail stores know that decision fatigue is real.
It's real.
And so by the time you spend 30 minutes going through a grocery store or shopping or whatever, what do? They tempt you with the pop and the candy and the stuff at the end.
At the end.
My kids always want it. I'm like, hey, listen,
what
just happened for your brain is you got overwhelmed, you experienced decision fatigue, and someone's trying to win some cash off of that moment. And so even that picture ballooned out by multiple years and like way more important decisions than do I get the Pepsi and Skittles or not.
That's right.
It's just a good reminder for all of us. So, Craig, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
This has been a great conversation.
Enjoyed it.
I look forward to just watching the campus, being engaged in the campus, helping my students be engaged. And even it really is a joy to be in a university town.
Yes.
I've always dreamt about living and leading in a university town.
Yeah.
And I will confess and admit that there are times I exhale when the roads are a little bit less packed.
I think we all do.
For the most part, I couldn't imagine living in a non-university town, and the way that this campus influences our city, and hopefully yes. our city receives the campus really well and the students, it's grateful. I'm grateful. And it was a great conversation with you. Thank you so much for giving me some of your time.
Thank you.
Sharing your life and also, you know, the way that you're loving our city, one life, one student.
That's it.
At a time, and I'm greatly appreciative to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.